That takes real dedication. And I'm glad it's not snowing. When I checked the weather forecast before I left Philadelphia, I was told there would be flurries in Denver today, but they seem to have missed us, and I hope they keep moving. I'm not as hardy as people who are used to living with snow and ice. Carrie's told you a little bit about what we're doing. Let me just, first of all, explain what STAR stands for. STAR stands for Sexuality Teaching in the Context of Adult Responsibility. The program evolved out of problems that arose. One of them was called Roe Wade, if you remember that decision, which took away all legal protections to the unborn. And as a specialist in obstetrics and gynecology, of course, I was not about to do abortions, but it also seemed to me that there's no point in just telling people don't have an abortion. What is really needed is don't put yourself in a situation where you need it, where you think that that's what you need to have. In other words, avoid the crisis pregnancy. And you know, there's a real easy way of doing that. Chastity before marriage and fidelity within marriage, and you've got it made, right? It works very well. But to get people to understand that takes a little doing. So I'm going to show you these slides, which I have put together, and I'll try to talk with them instead of against them. A lot of people, of course, are doing sexuality education. Some are strictly from the neck up, moralizing and theologizing. Others are dealing with emotions. And then others are dealing simply with making the reproductive system non-reproductive, otherwise known as contraception, right? When you think about it, you know, we have a reproductive system, and my colleagues are spending enormous amounts of energy just making sure it doesn't work. It's dumb, isn't it? When sperm and ova get together, they find each other when God chooses to give the gift of life, and there you go. And when people stop doing that, you're going to stop having the human race, because that's the way life goes on, right? So to just think that everybody should stop doing that is a little bit unrealistic. Okay, as educators, youth ministers, catechists, whatever your calling is, everyone has the same goal as an evangelizer. We want young people to learn how to know, love, and serve the Lord and follow Him. And in order to live happily in eternity, you also need to have some idea of how to live in this life. God is merciful, as we heard the Archbishop say at Mass today, but usually when you receive something wonderful, you want to reciprocate. And that's also a part of being a human, isn't it? God gives us all of this wonderful gift and invitation, and we respond. And young people especially are at the age where they're idealistic and they want to respond. And so here's one way they can do it. Human beings are still the same as they were decades ago, even though we're talking about changing the nature of the human with what, cloning, CRISPR, genetic manipulation of other sorts, we still have vegetative needs, nutrition, air, and water. We also have things in common with the animal world. We can reproduce, we can move, we're able to move. But we also have a few other things. We have free will, and we have an immortal soul. So even though we share something with the lower orders of creation, we're special, because, as Pope John Paul told us, the only one, the only creature willed for himself is the human. So, and we were created. There are those who think it just happened, but I'm not one of them. I can't imagine all of this happening by coincidence, and I don't think you can either. I mean, when you, even the smallest units of life, there's a plan in there. So, never mind. St. Paul already told us that our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, and he has some very specific things on how to live in these temples and how not to live in them. But in the last three decades, people have put these in compartments and specialized only in the body, or only in the emotions, or only in the moral ethical aspect. But the incarnation did take in the whole person, didn't it? The whole person's mind and soul. So, your Archbishop wrote a wonderful letter, The Splendor of Love. If you haven't found it, you can get it online. I really would recommend it. And if there are all kinds of people in the scriptures and in the church documents. We're meant to be images of God and to form a communion of persons. Today, people tend to be very isolated. They live in their telephones. But relationships take more than texting. You may have a hard time convincing the young people that that's the case. But, you know, the more you're buried in your own world, the higher the incidence of depression. Because, you know, a telephone is a wonderful instrument, but it only gives you what you put into it. Anyway, let's see if we can broaden our vision. Where do you begin talking to youth about their true identity? Theologizing for high school and lower is really a little above them. For middle school and high school, I'm told catechesis is more appropriate. Do you agree? Okay. And where do we start? Well, just to tell you what it is, it's a developmental curriculum which uses experiential learning of fertility biomarkers to help teens discover their inherent value and derive behavioral norms. Do you know what a biomarker is? It's a sign that your body gives, which you can interpret. Temperature is a biomarker. A lot of blood tests are biomarkers. But the one we're talking about is the cervical mucus. How many of you are aware of one of the natural family planning methods? Okay, cervical mucus comes from ovarian hormones, right? Okay, so once the girls, first of all, tune into the fact that they have this and begin to understand what it's telling them, that's a good bonding point for girls. We also, having identified that and its causes and its implications, we have to talk about responsible decision-making and communication skills in the area of sexual behavior. You know, Teen Star is not the whole law on the prophets. There are other people who teach that. Somebody objected because we didn't teach everything that was in the National Catechetical Directory. And I said, well, I never said I was going to take in everything. I'm lucky if I can get them to understand their sexuality and fertility, which is quite a bit. And in a sense, it impacts everything else. But, anyhow. So when the kids begin to get a hold of that, their self-understanding is greatly enhanced. And so is their relationship with parents. And by the way, anyone who is under 18 needs parental permission to participate. or guardians, but minors always make permission. Okay, as I mentioned, Roe Wade was really an impetus, and I had gone ahead and done what everybody else did, went around parishes, you know, and demonstrated embryonic and fetal development. That was very nice. I don't think it really impacted anybody's belief system. Then in 72, Cardinal Carberry, who was then the Archbishop of St. Louis, sent around a booklet called The Fertility Method. It came from the Department of Health and Hospitals in Los Angeles. Monsignor Deegan had gotten it around. That was the first I ever heard of this. And I was quite happy because, you know, when Humanitate came out in 1968, like most doctors, I now knew what I couldn't do. I had a pretty good idea before, but it was spelled out. But what nobody told us is what you can do. We had heard about temperature rhythm, and it was like flipping a coin. We didn't know very much, and probably what we learned was not only inadequate, but probably wrong. But here was something which made sense. And that was a good thing, because now I knew something that we could actually do. So I began to work with the Billings in 72 first, and then 73 I was sent to Melbourne, to Sydney, for the first meeting. And it was in the basement of a hospital, I think St. Margaret's, and every pillar was covered with pictures of charts that the women had put up. And I thought, well, there were not many statistics yet, but these were walking statistics. These people were happy to have discovered their fertility and to put their charts up on the pillars of the hospital. And I learned a great deal of science, which I didn't know before. And suddenly, and when I went back to St. Louis, suddenly I was the living expert on the Billings method in Australia. It was thousands of miles away, and telephone calls were quite expensive in those days. So we started with the AWARE Center, and we began to teach the Billings method. And nobody had really done use effectiveness studies yet, so that was our contribution. And I still remember the first year we had given all the charts to the young man who ran the data center at St. Louis University, and he processed it, and he came back and he told me, everybody who got pregnant had intercourse. So I said, well, thank you, but the only couple about which this was in doubt was not included in this series. You know, this was before Louise Brown, so he didn't get it. In case you didn't either, I was referring to our Lord and his virginal conception. But his sense of humor and mine were not jiving necessarily. Anyway, he went back and then he found out in which part of the cycle they had gotten pregnant and whether they were intending to or not. And we've still done use effectiveness studies. That has been one of our contributions to the Billings method. Anyway, 5 years later, I was back for another meeting, and John Billings asked me to start looking at the teenagers because nobody was doing that. And that was the beginning of TeenStar. I went back to Washington, and in a series of unusual happenings, I was introduced from one person to another. The sister of one of the Billings teachers was in a parish, and she did Meals on Wheels with Eunice Shriver, who was the sister of Jack Kennedy and the Kennedy Foundation. And on that basis, we got a grant to research what became the TeenStar program. So we go from one woman to her sister to home to Meals on Wheels to, you know, that's how it seems to go. Anyway, we got this grant, and because they were trying to prevent mental retardation. A lot of young girls were having premature deliveries, and these babies were more likely to be mentally handicapped. And so on that basis, we got the grant. And we were just going to work with girls at that point. Okay, So first we had to identify pilot groups, get parental consent for all minors, which meant sending letters, having meetings, had a control group. The one we had in Washington was in a suburban Maryland with Planned Parenthood. They didn't bother with parental consent. Oh, you know, you don't need that. We did, and we still do. And then I had a very nice medical outline for our research. And one of my first teachers was a Billings teacher who was a high school teacher. And she was like a Pied Piper. Somebody messed up on the invitations, and instead of just the parents, we had the girls there already. So of course I couldn't tell them what I expected because it would have prevented freedom of choice. But as much as they knew, they saw Mary Lou and they said, if you're going to be in this, I want to be in it. So instead of 15, she had 52 volunteers. Mm-hmm. And then she started to work and she looked for the outline and she said, that's not how kids work. Mm-hmm. So she asked them, do you all want to talk woman talk? And how they asked the questions is what became the curriculum. The first thing they wanted to know, what's that stuff? Which is the mucus? Where does it come from? Why is it there? What does it do? What are the effects of the hormones? How do they affect your moods, your relationships, and so forth? So it's a total grassroots curriculum. And I'm very glad that we could do that, because it works. People were asking us, what is your educational theory? Well, I think it's called the Socratic method. Self-discovery via experiential learning. And we ask a lot of questions. We don't give answers. We keep asking the question until finally the answer emerges. And that's not only how Socrates worked. Can you think of anybody else who taught like that? Who? And since he made us, I presumed he knew how we work, so I thought that was a good model to follow. And if I can recommend it, it works very nicely. But one of the hardest things for our teachers is not to rush in with answers. Because the moment you do that, you deprive the kid of working through it. And that you have to work through it in order to make it your own. And you know that. It takes patience, it takes restraint. But some kids are very slow learners. And some are going to make choices that we don't agree with. But nevertheless, God has given us free will, so you can blame him if you are feeling too depressed. Okay. But it's really important to honor that. When puberty hits with its hormones, it, you know, all the nicely organized life goes into a cocked hat. Your body is changing, your mind is changing, you think things you didn't ever think about, you say things you didn't mean. It's just a very awkward time. And the kids have to begin to separate from their parents and define themselves. And by the way, that's hard for parents to accept sometimes. John Paul had a wonderful gloss in it on one of his Wednesday audiences. He talked about the finding in the temple, that the separation at adolescence from parents, it's not a function of original sin. It's the way human nature is created, because obviously our Lord had no original sin. So we can tell parents, really, you're given this gift of a child as your responsibility, but you don't own it. I'm sure you've run into situations where the lines were blurred, and sometimes that becomes very difficult. I have this funny little drawing here to my idea of what goes on in puberty. This little drawing here, that's how the child still sees him or herself. They're impotent, whereas a parent is huge, big, all-knowing, and all-powerful. But in fact, they're already this size. In fact, the boys are probably able to look down on their mother. But they still think of themselves as having no power whatsoever. And so they feel like they have to deflate a balloon. And I believe the stronger they sound, the weaker they are. It's a real inverse proportion. Have you noticed that? And if instead of, you know, listening to the tone, you begin to hear what's really being said, you could do a lot with the kids. They're invulnerable at this age. They haven't experienced limitations yet. And they're on center stage. Erickson calls this the personal fable, which means that if you're at your desk and you're not greeting everyone who comes in, and you've overlooked somebody because you were writing something down, that girl will think you have it in for her. How could you not have seen her when she was there? And so forth. Boys aren't exactly like that, but they're invulnerable also. They're sure that they can drive the car at 100 miles an hour and they will never lose control, right? Everybody else can, but it's not going to happen to me. And we know that doesn't always work either. But it's a stage that kids go through. They still need boundaries. They're going to run up against them all the time. But you know, if the boundary isn't there, they're going to fall flat on their face. That's what permissive parenting or teaching can do. So you need to have the balance between protecting them when they need to be protected, and at the same time holding the reins loosely in your hand whenever they show that they can handle it. You let the boundaries out gradually, and maybe in 5 years you begin to have something which is not too bad. But the interim can be awful. When we talk to parents, we have three parent meetings, I'll come to that later, but at the second parent meeting, you know, they're beginning to notice changes in their kids and so forth. Good changes as well as not so good ones, which are painful. But I do offer them this. It's not canonical, but really, if parents can get their kids through adolescence without losing their sanity or their marriage, or strangling the kid, I think they will bypass purgatory, because I think they will already have been through it. And most parents are happy to hear that. I don't have the authority, but I can make a suggestion. Okay. So puberty, as I said, everything has to be rethought, physical, emotional, relationally, in relation to their parents, to their peers, to God, and frankly, to themselves. Again, body changes, physical changes, feelings, behavioral choices, and possible consequences. Ultimately, their identity is the goal. But as they mature and they begin to move from concrete to abstract thinking, their spirituality does cause them to search for their own answers, unless they are so addicted to the telephone that they never look. And even with the telephone and other media, we still live in our own skin envelopes. We do still have hunger and thirst and a few other things which tell us that we are in our skin envelopes, we are real, and we have limitations. We found that with the girls, because this was the concrete thing they were experiencing, we start to invite them to make observations. First, they simply observe what they feel and what they see, and describe it in their own words. Then we begin to find patterns. So it's a gradual process. Girls need to experience a cycle on average 3 times before they begin to see what is there. Those of you who already know fertility awareness-based methods know that from peak, which is that last layer of slippery, clear mucus, until the next period is usually the same number of days. The luteal phase, the average is 14 days. The range is anything, from 11 to 16. But people tend to have more or less the same number of days each time. I would say plus or minus 24 hours. Well, when they begin to see, they know just exactly when their period is supposed to come, and it comes. Boy, that is the eureka moment. My body is talking to me. And we have found that this is when they move away from peer pressure and begin to make their own decisions. It's as if they're squaring their shoulders and begin to be more grown up. And we hear it from them, their behavior, from their parents. And mothers say, oh, when the group wants to do something and Susie doesn't like it, she just comes home. Or she doesn't go. It's dramatic. That discovery of when they own their fertility, then they discover they're women, and then we can begin to talk about what does it mean. And it has a lot of meaning at so many levels. The mothers liked the program very much, but they said, what about our sons? So we found a priest who was a high school principal and a wonderful rapport with the guys. And after he'd been doing this for 5 years, he was kind enough to write it down for us. And it's still the young men's curriculum. They begin to learn about their own bodies and their own reactions, the psychological bases, all the other things that go along. What is intercourse? What does it involve? Lifestyles, the whole thing that you would expect boys to want to talk about. And we separate boys and girls when we talk about anatomy and physiology. When you get to the adult level, you can have a co-ed group. But in grade school and in high school, keep them apart for those topics. They're not going to talk sensibly if a person of the opposite sex is in the room. And obviously we need women to teach the girls, and we need men to teach the boys. Women, because they either know their own cycle or they have memories, so they can relate to what the kids are saying. And teaching them the cycle, you know, the first time you say, just call out some descriptions, you hear things like, yuck. So I have to say, well, is it sticky yuck or is it slippery yuck? But we need to get past a bit of hesitation. But once they get into it, they're okay. But you have to do a bit of a bubble dance. Well, that's how it goes. Because this is awful stuff. You know, if they really get hyper about it, I'm tempted to say, look, if your mother hadn't had this mucus, you wouldn't be here. So, it's taken out of the realm of the ordinary, and it's part of how God made us. Okay, and the mothers told us, one mother told me, I always know when my son has had Teen Star, because that day he holds the door open for me and for his sister. Because of the time he goes. On Teen Star Day, he's reminded. It takes a while to get through. But speaking of a while, Carrie reminded me, one of my teachers at a boys' high school had gone to an alum meeting. And, you know, most of the guys were already married. And their wives came and thanked Jean for what she had taught their husbands when they were in her class. I thought that was wonderful. 10 years later, something had been with them, which was important. And that, of course, is the whole attitude of respect and reverence. Anyway, we teach at the level of psychosexual maturity. Again, the biomarker is the key for the girls, and internalizing and understanding their fertility and sexuality. And this is it. We've got to stay with it long enough so they can internalize. You can't just give them a lecture. It means nothing. They have to make the observation, show it to you, get you to approve it, etc. You know, it's a whole process. Okay, and the boys learn to understand and master their body's reactions, etc. And we monitor the behavioral outcomes because I need to know if what we're doing is of any value, of any use. My colleague, Dr. Gilardi Keelan, in Chile, was able to conduct a prospective randomized control study in a very poor school in Santiago. And here is what she found. We had 251 boys and 195 comparison people, girls with the same number, 147. Among the boys, 8.8 experimented sexually during the program, twice as many as the control group. For the girls, it was 3% who experimented, and four times as many in the control group. The study group, there was a considerable discontinuation of intercourse and no resumption, whereas the controls did both. So this is good news. And we were, on the basis of that and some other studies, we were able to show what the medical profession calls support for primary and secondary abstinence. I don't like the word abstinence because it's not a correct description. We are born abstinent. Nobody needs to teach you how to be abstinent. You're all abstinent right now, right? You have to do something to have a sexual relationship. So rather than implying that people are always in relationship and occasionally stopping, you know, to eat or sleep, let's say what it is. So I don't use the word abstinence when I'm teaching. And even married people, abstinence is a heavy term. They're waiting usually, if they're spacing, they're waiting for their fertile phase to pass, and then they can make full use of the powers which are present. And that is absolutely moral and good. Because there are two purposes to the sexual act, right? To share love and to transmit life. Both are valuable. And there is such a thing as responsible parenthood. So you're not called in marriage to have an infinite number of children. For many obvious reasons. So anyhow, we were funded by PEPFAR. And we had a huge slew of people in Ethiopia and Uganda. Ended up having 29,000 go through the program, which is, by the way, once a week for 6 months, plus parent meetings, plus individual interviews. So that was an achievement. Uganda had 27,000, not quite as many, but also very worthwhile. And we were able to capture those who were still there 2 and 3 years after the program ended. A lot of them had left school, but we were able to deal with the ones we could get a hold of. And we found that in that group, 3.5% had been sexually active prior to the teen start, 4% started, but 50% had stopped more than 6 months before the assessment, which I think is quite wonderful. We were unable to make a tight comparison because PEPFAR would not allow us to use money for that evaluation. We were supposed to use the national figures, so all I could find out was that the average, the median age of first intercourse was 16.8. And ours were considerably, you know, at age 16.8, not half of them were not having intercourse. We asked why they were not refraining from having sex, or if they had stopped, why they stopped. And these were their reasons: prevent HIV/AIDS, morally wrong, don't want to be used, don't want to disappoint parents, against religious beliefs and prevent unwanted pregnancy. There were other reasons, but these were the ones that came up most often. We remember, we were teaching Teen Star One, which had no religious objectives, because when you're using federal funds, you can't teach religion. But if you notice, a lot of them said it was against their religious beliefs. They had religion. They may have had it in other classes in the school, but the fact is, it was not a direct thing in Teen Star One, whereas in Teen Star Two, we do add the theology of the body. In fact, it's interwoven through the whole curriculum. Outcomes were comparable, and I think this, giving them the chance to experience and internalize and understand what's happening, is tremendously important. Much more effective than just talking about it. We have curricula for grade school. I would say in this country, probably grades 7 and 8. Middle school is what you probably call it here. And then the high school curriculum is grades 9 and 10. And the college would call holistic sexuality, because for one thing, they wouldn't go for something called Teen Star for college. It's not the right word. And that can be a one semester program. It's mostly a discussion program. The outlines are here. And we also have a postpartum sequence. And all of these are either in what I call basic human or with the religious objectives. We've sort of talked about how to get started. Already you have to get permission for whoever is in charge of your group, get them to invite parents. You can do this in schools, you can do it in youth groups, you can use it in religious ed groups, wherever you can get in. And if you're doing youth groups, don't have too wide an age spread, please. You know, if you have somebody 13 and somebody 17, that 13-year-old is just going to be intimidated and not say anything. So I would say don't have more than 2 years age spread in the group, because their lives are going to be so different. That's important, because everybody needs to be able to talk if they want to. So we get the parents in for the minors, have a parent meeting, get a consent form. As I said, we separate by gender for anatomy and physiology. We can be co-ed for relational things and spiritual. We have individual meetings with the students every 2 months. And as I said, we need women to teach the girls and men to teach the boys. And we do offer additional parent meetings. So it is a labor-intensive program. The only good thing I can say about it is it works. But I would not want you to think, oh, well, we'll just have an afternoon of Teen Star. You won't have anything. Okay. Our culture is pressing kids to get involved in adult activities long before they're adults. Sexual relations is an adult activity. It leads to having children, and that's a responsibility. You need to be grown up to do that. I know an awful lot of girls have babies before they're grown up. It's a hard way to grow up, and some do better than others. But it's much better if you can complete your education and then find a partner when you are ready, and find someone when your mind is clear. When you're infatuated, things are not so clear sometimes. And by the way, there are interesting studies that people are choosing partners while they're taking contraceptive steroid hormones. They will choose a partner that would not be their choice if they were off the hormones. So a lot of people who get married when they're on the pill and then decide to get off, that's a big surprise when they get off the pill in order to start their first child. And this husband isn't what I thought he was going to be. Generally, people on partner selection on steroids, they choose someone who is very macho and very sexy. Whereas when they're not on steroids, they will choose somebody who will be a good provider. At least there are studies that show that.
Anyway, that's...
Sometimes, you know, we have people come for NFP program. They're on the pill and I'm not going to get off the pill until we're on. I don't tell them all of that because at this point I don't think they could hear it. I have many reservations about contraceptive steroid hormones. I don't think they're good medicine. Anyway, our kids need to understand not only chastity, but their biological sexual identity. And that is really affirmed when you have a monthly ovulatory cycle. And it's also affirmed by the guys when they realize that they're in charge of their reactions and they're not victimized by them. You know, who was it? God heavens. The Greek scientist and philosopher who wrote so much.
Plato?
No, not Plato. His name started with A.
Aristotle,
right. He wrote something called the Animalia, and he said that men's bodies have two souls, one in their general, and one in their general body, and one in their penis, because it had a life of its own. I think a lot of teenage boys go through a phase thinking that, well, they can be helped to understand. No, it's okay. It's understandable. Okay. We also have to talk about sexting and cyberbullying. We have to talk about pornography. Do you have a lot of that in your... Do you hear about a lot about pornography in your groups? Do the kids want to get off of it? Can you help them? There are good programs. We are not counselors, but we need to be able to have a good resource to whom we can refer people who need counseling. And I'm not just talking about an addiction to pornography, but it's amazing how much you hear sometimes in personal interviews, frankly, about abuse. And a Teen Star teacher needs to know how to listen for it and how to make a good referral. I don't expect you to be taking that on a casework basis, because that's not what we can train you for. But you do have to be able to sense to see it when it happens, when it is. Okay, we're in many countries in the world. Last I counted was 34. We're in many countries in Latin America, we're in Canada, in Mexico, Venezuela. Well, that program is in trouble right now, you can imagine, with their politics. Nicaragua, Ecuador, Chile is a big program, Peru, Guatemala, Argentina, Brazil, and in Africa, we're in Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, Senegal, Mauritius, Madagascar, few other places, one only in Australia, in Asia, Korea is a big program, Azerbaijan, Hong Kong, and then we have a whole raft of them in Europe, which I'm very grateful for. I'll try to run through this, but I hope I've given you a picture of Teen Star. The training requires 35 contact hours. We try to do one day online ahead of time, but then it would be 3.5 days of face-to-face contact. So if anyone is persuaded to try to pursue this, Carrie, I think, is hoping to have a Teen Star training sometime next spring. But I would hope that some of you might want to do this, because it's a real service to the kids. Because sex is very big when you're an adolescent. And it needs to be understood correctly. and use it properly. It's a wonderful thing, but it can get you into a lot of trouble. So do you have any questions? Comments? Finish 12, this is high school, you've done the needful. Every unit is not a one-time encounter. Sometimes you may have to meet three times to do the early units. So that's a little bit misleading. You go as fast or as slow as your group will want to go. It's very important to get the fundamentals straightened out first.
Once a week.
Once a week or once every 2 weeks if you can't manage once a week. But not less frequent than that, because they're going to forget so much. And in a youth group, you know, everybody isn't always present. But you can get somebody who was there the last time to do a recap, and that's good for everybody. So there are ways of handling that. You can also work as a team. You know, as I said, we need a man to teach the boys and a woman to teach the girls. Well, some classes can be taught by a person of either sex. You just have to be aware of where you are. So having it, yes, please.
I was wondering, just reading a little bit after your presentation, how much...
You have what, I'm sorry?
I was wondering how much... or if you have some problems while giving this with kids with same-sex attraction, having discussion, or if you have some of the material have that included.
Well, this is what we would discuss in our workshop when we talk about counseling. As I said, it's something that usually doesn't come up in class. It comes up more in the private interviews. And again, depending how serious they are about this, I would say, well, you know, you really need to work through this. And here is somebody, whether it's in Catholic Charities or some therapist that you know that's decent, but you would only need to make a referral. I think more often than not, people with same-sex attraction would simply learn what they can, and they would not discuss maybe their private things. In some of our places, there have been gender dysphoria kids. And there again, I think we respect everybody because God made them. We don't approve of certain actions. We are not asked to approve them or not, but some actions cannot be fruitful. And you're not going to applaud them no matter what. But if somebody tells you that they're in that kind of a situation, my first question would be, you know, how did you get into it? And I think an awful lot of boys who are in a same-sex situation have been abused. There are studies now that a very large number of males who have same-sex attraction have suffered sexual abuse in their own young lives. If you hear that, well then, of course, you know your laws, you have to report abuse. Obviously, you would work through that with the youngster first. You don't just pick up the phone behind their backs and say, well, you know, child protection. But we cannot be above the law. If we hear about abuse, we have an obligation. But the child has to understand first that we have this obligation, that they need help, and we are unfortunately not the ones who can give it. So let's get you to somebody who can. Does that answer you?
Yeah.
It's not as rare as we wish it were. As far as gender dysphoria, once again, you would want to hand it to recognize the fact that between 85 and 97% of youngsters who think that their mental sex is different from their biological sex revert to their biological sex by the end of puberty. So to do transitional treatment, whether surgical or medical, is totally inappropriate. Yes. I'm sorry.
Do you see a change in children who have been abused in early childhood, or?
No. Some are quite dramatic. One of our teachers in New Jersey called me up because this girl had what was obviously a purulent discharge. So, under the law, a minor can be treated for sexually transmitted infections even without parental permission. So I was able to refer her to a nearby natural family planning service where I knew the gynecologist. So it turned out she had florid gonorrhea. And how did she get it? Well, she got it from her stepfather. And she didn't want us to tell her mother, because when she had told her mother before, her mother had taken a butcher knife and run after the father, and she hadn't caught him, and she was afraid this time the mother would catch him, in which case the stepfather would be dead, the mother would be in jail, and where would she be? So we had to get that sorted out with the school counselor and ultimately with the police. But the first thing we had to do was get her on antibiotics so that her reproductive organs would not be permanently destroyed. That was pretty dramatic. That the teacher, she was a Salesian sister and a trained nurse as well as a teacher. She telephoned me and we went from there. And we do offer support for people during their first year of teaching. We call it a practicum. And you can be in touch with us electronically or however. And you can also maybe have a meeting where you can share your experiences, your joys and your sorrows, and help one another. Because you'll be in the same geographic area, and that's a plus. And then one of us can be available either physically or with Zoom or Skype or something like that. So there are possibilities. But we're not gonna just turn you loose and wish you good luck. And we also pray for you. Mm-hmm. And we hope you pray for us. Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Do you ever encounter parents who are concerned about their daughters learning this information? Like they're concerned that they might use it as a...
Absolutely, and it's one of the things we talk about at the first parent meeting. If nobody raises a question, we need to. Will this information be misused? Well, obviously they can, because they have free will. But what we have seen in our behavioral outcomes is it doesn't usually happen. If somebody is absolutely stuck on the pill and won't get off of it, we can't touch them. But otherwise, generally when they begin to discover their body, they're so fascinated. That's the way it seems to go. Katie was intrigued by one of my teacher's stories, Mary Lou. This youngster had been in the program about 3 months, and she had, I guess, acne. and her mother took her to the doctor, and the doctor was going to put her on the low-dose birth control pill, which would clear up her skin. And the girl said, well, isn't that going to change my mucus pattern? And both the mother and the doctor were more than shocked. But the doctor said, yes, it would. And the girl said, well, then I don't want it. We have to find something else. So once they own it, it's theirs. And it's part of who they are. Anything else? Yes, please.
Sister, thank you for all the information being here and all your great work. My question is, do you see this as more of a parish-based or successful, or is it more work run through the archdiocese? No.
Well, actually, it could be either one. Sometimes it's easier to get in a parish. You have a little bit more flexibility. School schedules tend to be very tight, and it's harder to get in. A lot depends on the principal. Now at St. Mary's, the principal is already persuaded, so he's making room for it in the curriculum. But youth groups are easier to get into. And in many places, it was part of instruction for confirmation. Your confirmation is a little too young. You have to go where the body is. And I believe yours is coming at age 9. Most of your kids won't be anywhere near the beginning of puberty. And you really have to work with the body on this. But go where you can. Eventually it'll spread, yes.
So the follow with this is just that the church is kind of in the middle or reeling from the crisis of, you know, with priests and,
yeah, I
know. And things. So you know, it could be, I'm not sure how to word that. Do you think it could be something else that...
I think this will be a wonderful counter to what's going on. How many people are ready to hear it, I don't know. Your Archbishop is well ahead of the crowd. So let's rejoice in that. But those who are completely tied in knots over paying for predations, it's a pity, because they're paying out a heck of a lot more money than a Teen Star program costs. You know, you can't sell a woman her own mucus. So.
And I'm sorry to
go ahead.
Ask one more. How do you see this working with, you know, the different fertility apps?
Well, we have to make sure that they're good ones, because some are not good. My colleague Marguerite Wing has led a study on which apps are okay. The kids like to use their telephones, but we encourage them to start making paper records at the beginning so they have a picture, because the app is going to make them choose from something outside of themselves. But if they can use their own words, I think that that's better, because it's their own. But eventually they'll probably put stuff on a phone. But that's okay. Once they have it, if they want to keep a record, that's fine. I'm not opposed to that. Yes?
So you said you have the elementary and high school, the 7th and 8th graders, and then program for
9
through
10
graders.
Mm-hmm.
Do they move from the younger program and then go to the next program, or are they the same just for the different
ages? Well, it depends on where you are. In Chile, they actually start with things well before puberty, but they're talking about relationships and mutual respect. But they have Teen Star once a week, at least in this one school, all the way from kindergarten to high school. They just take on more sophisticated topics as they do. But it's a little bit like playing the piano. Your left hand is going to be your fertility cycle, and your right hand is going to be the social, the intellectual, the spiritual. And there's really no limit. But a two-handed piece has better harmony than just one-handed alone. But there's no limit to the things you can bring in. You know, in Chile they have all kinds of stuff on new information on the brain. That's fine. But put it together with what you can see. You can't see your brain. At least not yet working. There are certain things that happen that make you think your brain is working, but it's indirect. But in one of our schools in the Bronx, they had teens starting grade 7 and grade 8, and they had the same curriculum. And the interesting thing is when they came back the second year, it was all new to them because they had grown so much in the previous year. But high school has more stuff in it than grade school.
What school is that?
Holy Cross. Do you know the Bronx?
Yeah, I did the Europe service in Mott Haven.
Okay. Well, there was long-term effect. Dorothy Duganzik was teaching. Now they have a different program that they put out throughout the whole diocese. So they, even though it's not as comprehensive as Teen Star, they're doing it. But she went to the grocery store and the checkers greeted her and said, "I'm still charting." Yeah. 10 years later. Wonderful. Once you have it, it's yours.
Okay.
Well, Karen, shall we wind up, please?
Well, thank you for coming. I really want to offer myself as a resource to you. I'm quickly becoming a Teen Star expert, but I'm not quite yet. But I'm learning, and I would love to just be a resource to you. So if this is something that you're interested in, I want you to call me here at the diocese and talk to me about what you're thinking, maybe questions you have, concerns, and we'll figure it out step by step. So it really is exciting. We met with Archbishop Aquila today, and he was really thrilled to hear of the response of people wanting to learn about it. Now the next step is, getting training and finding people who want to teach it. As Sister said, it's not a quick program, it's not easy, but it's human. She said earlier today, she goes, the manual is not a cookbook. So it's not like you have to follow this recipe, but you learn the information and you apply it to your kids and you apply it to your situation and you just keep growing and growing. And so I love that about it. And I think the more that we can relate to young people as human beings and help them to experience how God made them and help them to discover that on their own. We're not shoving anything at them, right? We're letting them to discover it and then make sense of it. We're helping them to be the person that God created them to be. So I'm really excited about it, and please let me know if I can be of help, if I can, represent the diocese or come to a parent meeting or, whatever I can do, I'm happy to do it.
Well, thank you so much for all the trouble you've gone to bring me here. It's been quite an effort. She's practically carried me around for the last 2 days.
Thank you.